education of our children doesn't begin and end at academia. There is a spiritual responsibility on each parent and teacher to nurture and train a young soul spiritually. This is called Chinuch. Join Rabbi G every Monday at 2 p.m. as he explores education and Chinuch for parents and teachers. Torah isn't education, it's transformation.
What a 1.9 Chafam Chachinuch Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3. We bring up a new topic, a new discussion, something we need to figure out, learn, and chat about just to get a better understanding and what are the tools we have for that. And today, although we don't always focus, and we generally don't focus that much in the Jewish calendar and things around that, however, today is Rosh Chodesh Elul, is the beginning of our 40 days until Yom Kippur, which is the known as the holiest day of the year, as well with the holidays afterwards. And it's time for preparation. A lot of us who had the opportunity heard the shofar today already, and we are getting there. So that is going to be a bit of our topic, but from a bit of a different angle. And in the discussion today, we're going to be speaking about two different angles of it. One is the connection and relationship with Hashem from an alternative way. We all are very familiar with the, or some of us, with the famous story of a child who was in a shul and he wanted a daven, but he knew nothing. And the moment he felt extremely connected and inspired, he took out his whistle and he whistled for prayers, which brought an unbelievable connection and was recognized as a very powerful tool of connection, and obviously not the traditional way. And also, we're going to talk with a parents expert, meaning what is the parents' role in creating that relationship and connection, and how do we even see the holidays with a relationship part aspect. So let's get to meet and know our guests first. Good afternoon to Gabriela Mendelson. You are an art therapist here in Joburg. Let's get to know you a bit.
So hi, thank you so much for having me on the show. This is really exciting. It's always fun to share what I do, especially because it's so niche. So I'm an art therapist. I qualified in England before it was available to study it here. And art therapy, in a nutshell, is a means of expression through using the tool of art. So basically, an art therapy session would look a little bit like a normal talking psychology session where you want to try to dig deeper to release what needs to be healed. The only difference is instead of only using words, you use art as well to just go a bit deeper.
Which is, by definition, an alternative way to create connection and communication.
Exactly. I can go on for a long time about the role of art.
Yeah, we have an hour. Let's see what we get. And our second guest here in studio is Dr. Jody Azer, who is a professional who developed a parenting program to look a bit at the role of parenting today, etc. Let's get to know you a bit better. Good afternoon, Jody. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here. Yes, so I am a counselor. I work a lot with parents with stressed children and couples counseling, a myriad of different things. But for today's purposes, I think looking at building that parent-child relationship and very much around how we have kids with a lot of anxiety, and now we want to connect them to a higher purpose and looking at that. And art therapy, I think, is one of the best ways, play therapy as well, which is something I do. And now putting it together and showing kids a different way of connecting, not just by us saying so and telling so, but really showing and guiding in different ways.
Okay, so let's start unpacking that a bit and understanding a bit of the different roles. So, you know, you also mentioned about art therapy and play therapy, which is almost a connection through a third party.
Yes.
Okay, so a connection through a third party, I'll go to you, Gabriela, from that side. Is that not distancing the connection?
I think, especially in the case of like therapy, where it could be quite intimidating to just sit across the room from a stranger and pour out what you're feeling, the art acts as a bridge rather than a distancing. It acts as a connecting. Like you could see a river as something that separates you, or you could build a bridge and see it as something that actually connects to areas. And I think the art really is that bridge.
What do we need to do to make the art a connecting and not a boundary?
There's a few things. The first thing, and this is something I keep emphasizing over and over again, is I really stay away from using the word analyze when I'm in a session, because analyzing infers that I'm the authority and I'm going to look at your art and tell you what you're trying to communicate to me. I rather use the word reflect. And when you reflect, it's a relationship. You work together, you ask questions, and together you can understand the artwork better. That's on the one more verbal way. But on a more creative way, which is what I think you're trying to get at, is there's so many ways to use the art as a space to work together. So often I'll be in a session with a child and they'll invite me to paint with them or create with them. So then we're in it together. Sometimes it's not even about creating together, but just about me witnessing what they're creating. Even if I just
witnessing, not analyzing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll take what you're saying, and I'm going to ask Jody, you know, parents are authority. And
yes.
Gabriela was very careful to say, I'm not the authority. I'm connecting and I'm working together and I'm, you know, going through this experience and discussing. But what do parents do if they are the authority and they do need to be the authority? How do they take that role of connecting a child to anything?
So what I loved about that was, for me, it's about reframing and collaboration. Collaboration makes it a lot better than, yes, you are the authority, but it's how you put it to your children. You know, very often kids, you say, no, they're going to do the opposite. It's about how are we going to come up with a solution that is going to work for both in a way that they're not just going to be rebellious. And
okay.
Parents become very anxious and frustrated and irritable when they want a child to do something. And one of the things I say is that your anxiety is contagious, but so is your calm. So how do we look at ways of showing a child that it's for their better or betterment?
Okay, so before we go there, I'm going to ask the question, but we're going to deal with it after the break, because you do need to take a short break to hear what's new, what's happening, and what are the specials FM has. However, you know, it almost sounds to me like sometimes telling a parent, just be calm and contained and relax is basically when you're flying and the stewardess tells you, before the plane crashes down, oh, just stay calm and relax. Take the when the air thing
yes.
drops, then just breathe normally and calmly.
Exactly.
It's very seems to be very effective. So we'll take a short break, and then when we come back, after hearing, as I said, the different options and specials and things that are happening, we will continue in this discussion.
Torah isn't education; it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back. And right before the break, we were speaking to two professionals, Gabriela Mendelson, who's an art therapist, and Dr. Judy Iser, who is a play therapist, but also a counselor, and also works with parents and parenting, etc. And, you know, you spoke about, before the break, Jody, you mentioned about parents staying calm and collected, and when your child is, in a state, we'll call it. When you become anxious and frustrated, it's contagious. And when you stay calm, it's contagious. However, I think that would qualify to easier said than done.
Yes.
Do you agree? So how
Absolutely.
Do we address that?
So when we're in that state, we need to walk away and be able to take a moment for ourselves to calm ourselves. There's a lot of breathing exercises and somatic breathing that I teach parents. And it's been able to almost see that red robot, the red stop sign, to just be able to take yourself and remove yourself from the situation, especially when we're wanting them to connect from a religious point of view and understand why we are doing the things we are doing. And writing down what it means to you and why, because only through that can we then let our children know the importance of it. But through play, and you and Gabriela will speak to art, you can actually show them the fun about it, but then connecting them to that part of it. So bringing it down to a level that they can also understand, because it depends on the age groups you're dealing with.
Right. But before religion, there's an identity.
Absolutely.
And to start bringing in the identity of who we are as people and
yes.
what we do and connecting to it. And many times it's very important for the parents that the children will connect, but the children don't really connect.
Yes.
Is there a way to work on the identity parts? Maybe Gabriela, from your side, how do we use art or other methods, or just any thoughts about connecting to the idea, to the identity of it, to actually having it as part of who you are.
So just to clarify before I go on, I think I've also been using the term child or children, but this is as applicable to adults, mm-hmm. and I work with adults as much as with children, so.
100%. Yeah. I was thinking when Jody was saying about seeing the red and calming down, like all the sensory ladders we put for our kids, well, actually maybe we should put them for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I teach.
So, yeah.
So I feel like with all creative fields, art, music, drama, dance, it speaks to something a lot deeper than we can always put words on and how we always express ourselves in our day-to-day life, which is why it's important to always tap into it. And when I say deeper, and I'm going to move into music therapy, but the first thing we encounter as a being is the rhythm of our heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the way of self-expression is creative from that, all these creative outlets, music, art, dancing. My 10-month-old baby now, you know, you put the music on and she knows how to move her body. You know, before.
Sorry, I'm a bit slow on this one.
Yeah,
how is that going to connect us to the heartbeat? And
so I'm saying the creative outlets as a self-expression, I think, really brings out one's inner identity a lot more than what we see in our day-to-day experiences. It's those creative moments of music, dance, art that really speak to who we are deep down inside, more so than what we can say.
Correct. And we could feel something before we can express it.
Exactly.
And really be there. You mentioned about the heartbeat and about that, so that's where I want to clarify a bit. Are you saying that when we get a beat of music, of dancing, of creativity, or anything, it's somehow connected to our inner rhythm, or not necessarily?
I mean, again, this is, I don't want to step too much on music therapy's toes, but I just remember that feeling of like, when you listen to music, it speaks to something very deep inside, and our heartbeat is a rhythm. That's like the first rhythm we're going to encounter from gestation. You know, there's this rhythm within us.
Subconsciously.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's why the creative outlets, music therapy, dance therapy, art therapy, you know, it really speaks to that because we in touch with rhythms and stuff from before we even experience the world outside.
Okay, so that will definitely come into that place. Could there be a reality that a parent or people around the children, by having a negative impact on the days, or becoming too anxious, as you said, or extremely stressed around the holidays, will actually reject a natural connection that the children have, and they'll start feeling a disconnect from it?
From creating?
Yes. If your parents are panicking about art all the time, you won't do it. Or if it's becoming like a power struggle.
If that is the case, I would use that as an opportunity to reflect on that emotion rather than panicking about the panicking.
Get it. Okay. From the parent side, what you're saying, Jody, is there a aspect of creating a resentment by children to something that naturally they will be connected to just because the parents are overpassionate or overstressed or over enforcing?
Definitely. I think when we start to over-enforce anything, we are going to get pushback and sometimes rebelliousness. So it's really how we do it. And in a space of non-judgment, as we need to be with each other. So the example you just gave, you know, if you want your kids to be drawing for the sukkah and hanging things and they're feeling stressed about it, rather don't do it. Let's go buy some things. What do you think we can do? Go to a crazy store, do whatever. But it shouldn't be about the stress of it. It needs to be non-judgmental. It needs to be like, what do you think would be fun for us to do? So actually getting their buy-in and process to it, as opposed to we just give what we want and how we will do it.
Okay.
And that's where I talk about that collaborative part of it.
So let's go to that collaborative part. In a way, you're saying don't talk about it, just do it.
Yes, and not only just talking down, but let's talk about what does it feel like for you? Asking questions about how it is resonating. What makes it feel good for you to be doing this? What are they learning at school that's making it feel good or bad? because sometimes it's also being pushed down at school and maybe they're not understanding it. So in that way, they're going to maybe rebel against it or not because they're not understanding it. So what is happening at school that you're not understanding? How can we work on it together? As opposed going in of you will do it because I say so, your school says so, and this is how it's done.
Because I'm your mom, that's why.
Exactly.
I get it. Okay. So, yeah.
Just to go on that, when I say about, you know, if that is the case, that they rebel because you're pushing it too much, and I said, you know, to reflect on that and work with that, I think it's important to try and figure out why they're rebelling or why they don't want to do it and what the, you know, so some kids are petrified of making mistakes, for example, in their artwork. So you say, let's do something for the sukkah, and they really do want to do something to decorate the sukkah, and they're really excited about it because they're so petrified of putting it up for everyone to see and it's not going to be perfect. They react or act out or throw a tantrum and rebel, but it's not because of anything else other than they, so it's an opportunity to sit with them and say, what is it that you don't want to, you know, what's the reason for this? What you scared of? What you, not always in those words, a little bit more gentle, but
whatever,
you
works.
Know, and then you can sort of get to the bottom. Okay, they're scared of putting something up in the sukkah that's going to look funny. And then you can say, but what is, you know, mistakes are beautiful. Or you can work with that and work with the individual as well.
So where do we find the line, Gabriela, on what you said? Where do we find the line between identifying if a child is a perfectionist and scared of mistakes or not being perfect or even seen with mistakes, or when maybe the child just has literally simple anxiety of performance anxiety and they'll say, well, it looks perfect. I don't want everybody to see it. It's my art. I don't want anybody to notice it. I don't want to put it in the sukkah. I don't want to see it. How far do we push, not to push? Where would you cross, put the line there?
In my experience, when a child's scared of making mistakes, it's such a strong character trait that it's quite easy to see that is the cause of it.
So it's perfectionism, it will show, it's not necessarily performance.
In my experience, I think, especially in the case that we're talking in this particular case, if it's your own children, I think there is a sense of intuition and knowing your child and resonating and knowing their history and the previous experiences that they've had. So if you know your child, you know that 2 years ago Sukkot, their artwork got ruined in the rain, and that's going to bother them. They're petrified of their artwork getting ruined again. So it's taking a collaboration of experiences and knowing your child and knowing yourself and intuition and kind of mushing it all together.
Basically gather information and be intuitive. That's what you're saying. Okay. So, Jody, from your side, if a parent wants to be in, take that role on, as Gabriela says, gathering the information, being intuitive, being up to things, what would that look like?
Well, sometimes it's also a child speaking to you. They don't always, but they'll come home and say, you know, I'm not the best, lack of better English, how they say it, I'm not the best drawer in the school. Or in my class.
I'll tell you how they say it. I'm the worst. I don't know how to do it. It's horrible. Everybody sees I'm the worst in the whole class.
Yes.
Would that sound more accurate, probably?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, my nephew came to me and he said, I'm not the best drawer. My friend said so. And if that's the kind of conversations that they have in or get in, you know, it's listening to that kind of feedback and really trying to understand it. And I think at that point, it's probably addressing it with a teacher to say, is this what's really going on? Is there something we need to be doing or looking out for? And it's saying, but everyone is different. Your art is different to their art, to everyone else's. If they're not comfortable, don't push it also. I wouldn't say, okay, we have to hang it up. You hang up what you want to, but let's then find alternatives of doing it.
Be chilled about it.
It doesn't have to be forced, because the minute we start forcing the issues and forcing things, that's when we're going to get a child really pushing back. So let's find other ways. So if I draw with you, maybe that's something we could do and consider. And maybe not make yours as perfect so you can say, wow, yours looks better than mine. You know, coming down to their level where it's not, oh, but yours is so good, mum, or dad, or whatever it is. And really just trying to get to it. But also, for me, it's about affirmations with kids. It's really saying, you are beautiful, you are perfect, just the way you are. And Hashem makes us all different. We all have different strengths. We all do things differently. And that's why we are the way we are.
Okay, so working on that acceptance and that unconditional love and connection.
Yes.
So I want to go to the practical side of things, okay? Because we know that the holidays that will come in a month can also be very busy. And parents could be very stressed that exactly. You know, that much work and mom's organizing everything and vice versa. And there's so much happening and that can be very tense. But we have a month now. So what would it look like to actually start engaging now with the children in a practical way of creating art, creating some stuff, building stuff for the sukkah, maybe talking about the shofar already, introducing in a very non-pressuring and a very welcoming, loving way? Let's talk practically. So what do we do? So
I love just putting the kids in the kitchen with you. You're cooking, you don't know, like, should I be spending quality time with my kids and doing art with them and doing tasks with them, or do I have to actually cook the food for the 40 guests that I've invited for supper? I don't have 40 guests for supper, but if I did.
It's 38, by the way, yeah.
Or do that, and then I think that, and this is a lesson for everything in life that can be applied to everything, it doesn't have to be binary. It doesn't have to be my kids or cooking. It can be put the kids in the kitchen with the food and say, oh, what happens if you add chocolate chips to the hot water? Is that, you know, what's that going to do? And make every experience a creative experience.
Okay. So basically, so you're talking about not even going and doing extra things, first bringing children into your own space.
Mm.
Okay. So, but when you bring the children into your own space, how do you keep that balance of them being not helpers, but partners, but also not partners because, you know, you're the mom and kind of telling them what to do? Where do you work with that or just be natural?
I think every single experience of it is different and has its own reaction. And if it's going to, you know, be about having a little bit extra spice, which you can maybe manage, versus having the flour spilled across the floor, which is something that you're wasting or something, you know, you've got to sort of decide, what are my values? What is something that I'm not compromising on? Making mess, maybe I can compromise, I can clean that up, but wasting food, that's my red line. If you waste food, if you tuck a good, perfectly good food in the dustbin, that's my red line. And for me, it's just about, you know, picking your battles, I guess.
And I guess also for the parents to be able to say, okay, so the food won't look perfect. It's fine, I had a great time with my child and we made it and it works and it maybe is not the visuals that we want. I'm going to go off topic a second because many times the feedback I get on the show is, well, you had these professionals, let's speak a bit about practicalities of their work. So, you know, you, Gabriela, as an art therapist who's, you know, done a lot of work in that area, and we've seen many results, as well as Jody, you doing a lot of work in play therapy and holding that space very strongly. What are the overlaps? What are the differences? And any mom who's sitting here and is debating, do I go to art? Do I go to play therapy? How do we guide them? Who wants to take this on first? Ah, she's putting it to you. Jody, go for it.
I think, as we just said briefly just now, art does come into play therapy as well, where kids get to draw if that's what their choice is of the day. But I would refer to Gabriela if it was, you know, more to be specific around it and to really get to look at the pictures. And if you wanted to, I know we've put this in inverted commas, analyze them to get a more sense and a better reading of a child. For me, if I was doing play therapy, I'm watching play. I'm not as engaged as it would be with the drawing. For me, I want to see what a child is doing in their actual play, what they choosing to play with, because they are trying to work out their own thing. I'm not saying you're doing it right, you're doing it wrong, well done. They're doing it in their own specific way, which tells me a story.
So, but what do you do with that story? Okay, so you analyzed, you got the story, you got, now what?
Now it's taking that and saying, okay, these are the areas we need to work on with your child. It's giving the relevant feedback to the parent, but it's looking at what is coming up. So you can have a child do the same thing, which is what I've had, do the same thing for 6 weeks in a row. Take the same doll, play the same way, dress it, undress it, and exactly the same way.
Okay.
And after 6 weeks, this one particular child on the 7th week walked in and said, oh, I didn't realize you had so many toys in your room. And she had worked through what she was needing to work through in those 6 weeks on her own.
So in the work that you do in play therapy, it almost sounds like you're describing more of identifying what needs to be worked on and helped, and then feedbacking it to the parents, etc., but not actually doing the work of change with the child.
You're not doing the work of change, but you're also building the trust that if they need to speak to you, they will also find the place to speak to you, because it depends on the age. Your younger kids don't have the words necessarily for what they're feeling.
So then they parents will play should in not that expect way. The change.
They should.
Unless you feedback to them, okay, this is what you need to work on.
Yes. So these are the not necessarily work on, but these are the things I'm noticing, what is happening in the home. But I will always sit down with the parents initially to say what has been happening. I will go back to the birth, because sometimes a trauma has happened at birth or even before when they were pregnant, and it happens and it plays into the childhood, because I also specialize a lot in trauma. So it's looking at what has happened, what is happening in the home at the moment, what is the parents' relationship like, and then seeing how the child is feeding off it. Older kids will sit and talk to you. They will say, oh, I'm feeling this way, or my brother is always nasty to me. And then we'll talk about strategies. But okay. It's got to be really dependent on age. And that's why I gave you the one example, but she was like 3 years old at the time. She's not going to tell me what she was feeling around it.
So she managed to get it.
I knew from the parents what was happening in the home, but she worked around it for herself. And suddenly noticing there's other toys in the room was, okay, I'm done with this now.
Okay, and that effect will be outside the room as well.
Exactly.
Okay, so we do need to take a break to have our opportunity to hear the specials that Chai FM have organized and different announcements in the marketplace here. So we will do that, and when we come back, Gabriela will dive a bit into art therapy and see the potential difference. Sounds to me like art therapy potentially is a bit more hands-on and connected, but let's take a short break and we will be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we are a very interesting discussion with two professionals leading in their field, with Gabriela Mendelson, who is an art therapist, and with Dr. Jody Azer. Did I get the name correct?
Yes.
I know, okay.
You.
I can get it eventually. Who is involved in parenting, play therapy, etc. And right before the break, Jody explained to us a bit more about the play therapy role. Let's go to art and understand. Gabriela, hearing Jody, what is different in an art therapy session?
Well, two answers from a very practical point of view. When you said, you know, if you're going to recommend play therapy or art therapy, it sounds like play therapy, I would refer younger kids, very practically, okay. That there's probably an age cutoff below a certain age that I personally won't see.
What would be that age?
I'd say below 7.
Okay.
Mm. And I would refer to play therapy. So that's on a very practical point of view. On another very practical point of view, I think it's also the therapist. You know, you can have the most fantastic therapist, but the child has to click with the therapist. So if it's above the age of 7 and it's like play therapy, art therapy, which one should I go to? It's about which therapist do you connect to.
I think almost like the parent first needs to click with the therapist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because to be fair, I've seen kids go to therapy and not click, and then by the second session or third session, suddenly they created that bond. Obviously, there needs to be some time to actually measure it and see. What would you measure? Like 3 sessions, 4 sessions, 1 session until you decide if it's like working or not?
Everyone's so different. It's so hard to say. Mm-hmm. Some people take 6 sessions to warm up. Some people never warm up but appreciate having that safe space. I can't give you an exact time.
Okay. So the common denominator that we look at when we talk about play therapy, art therapy, and a few more therapies as well, like Snuzlin or OT sometimes, is the enabling therapy.
Mm.
What can we take from enabling therapy, and maybe explain what that is shortly, and use in the settings of our homes? Gabriela.
Well, I actually wanted to comment earlier when you were saying about affirming and saying, yeah, that's really good or really beautiful. And I was thinking, you know, how to apply the therapy space to what you were saying with that, because in the therapy space, and specifically with art therapy, we're very careful not to judge. And not judging means you don't say it's bad, but you also don't say it's good.
Yes.
Because by saying it's good, you're also judging, and you're also setting a standard of, okay, well, is she going to think this is good or bad the next time? And how do I make it so that she thinks I'm good? And it sort of continues a cycle that you want to try and avoid.
100%. So many times when I'll hear people tell a child, no, it's okay to cry about this. Just cry. You're allowed to cry. It's fine. By giving them permission, we're basically indicating there are times that it's okay, there are times that it's not okay. Some emotions matter, some emotions don't, which is, okay, it's a whole different topic, but it's coming down to the same concept of it's okay, it is what it is. These are your emotions.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think, you know, to take that therapy idea and to put it into parenting is quite a tricky balance, because a child does need to be affirmed 100%, and maybe the therapy space isn't the space to always say this is good, this is good, this is good, but maybe a parent does need to do that sometimes. So I think that is important to sort of differentiate that therapy's therapy and parenting is slightly different.
Okay. Or we could potentially separate and say, when it comes to emotions, to accept when it comes to behavior, then this is good, this is not good, and what is accepted.
I do think that it's always helpful as a parent, very simplistically, my answer will be to ask questions. So instead of to make a statement, to always make sure you're asking.
Okay.
So for example, the artwork looks like a mess. Instead of saying that's bad or that's good or that's awesome, I love that you made a mess, you can sometimes say, did you have fun making this? What were you feeling when you made this? What were you thinking about when you made this? And that starts a conversation going rather than giving a statement and putting your own stuff into it, because often I think as a therapist also you're not immune to it, but as a parent very much you want to put your own projections, your own stuff, your own what you're feeling into what your child does. So if you're scared of mess and your child's made a mess, you're like, oh, okay, that's nice. You know, you react badly to it, but it's not your child, it's you. So you have to also self-reflect all the time and, you know, constantly regulate yourself before you engage with your kid.
So remember, if you're communicating with a child, for the child or for yourself, and are you projecting your whatever you're feeling at this moment at them? Okay. So as a parent, it's very difficult to take that role.
Yes.
Where would you put that into practicality?
So when I spoke about affirmations, I do think it's important with the affirmations, exactly what you're saying. But it is nice to be able to go back to, I think there is a difference between knowing who's a therapist and who's not. It's very hard to teach parents to be a therapist. So they are going to default to good, bad, etc. Sometimes saying like, what did you draw that picture of? Because they'll say, oh, what do you think of this picture? What is it? And you actually have no idea. So you can say, well, could it be this? Could it be that? And
but is
say,
that a
no.
problem to ask when a child, that comes up quite often when a parent doesn't identify. Instead of bluffing and saying, oh, wow, it's amazing, why can't they just say, oh, so cool, what did you draw?
Yes, and saying, like, I love the colors you're using. What do they mean to you? Like, are those your happy colors?
Yeah, but is it okay, Gabriella, to just say that?
Definitely,
What is it that you draw?
Okay. And sometimes I think you'll be really surprised. And I think by not doing that, you're taking away a very, very important opportunity for your child to express themselves and for you to connect with your child.
Okay. So to be able to put it there. You know, there's almost two separate questions. I don't know how we're going to manage it time-wise, but I feel like we have to squeeze them in. So I'm going to start with you, Jody, and very quick. Many times when... Okay, here we go. Craig already tells me we have to end, but no, we're going to get these questions in. So, Jody, when it comes into the parents, and, you know, one parent comes and is very enabling and loving the art and loving the whatever it is, and then the parent starts getting frustrated that their spouse is not doing the same. How do you manage that dynamic of supporting your child and not being overprotective? Because it's not so beneficial to attack your partner because, you know, you didn't react nicely to the whatever, and the child sees and feels and picks that all up. So where do we keep that balance of supporting with our spouses and at the same time not overcrossing that boundary?
So for me, when working with the parents, it's very much about working with boundaries and how they show up as a front together. They don't have to agree on everything, but then take it away. To say, it wasn't really okay when you did that, and can we at least come up as a united front when we're looking at things with our children together? coming up with certain things. So when you've got parents that are doing different things, that's when our children don't know from right from wrong. It's like, but dad said yes, but mom said no. So instead of, oh, but daddy said this was terrible and mommy said this was great, then go and speak to daddy or go and speak to mommy. We start, that's how we teach them to set each other off. So rather say, oh, well, go and ask mommy what she thought, and I'm not talking about a picture specifically, or go and ask daddy what he said. Instead, I will speak to daddy about that, I will speak to mommy, and then come back with an answer.
We spoke and we sorted it out. Okay. Before we hear our advertising options and specials, just, Gabriela, very shortly on your side, you're in a very unique position, and therapists generally at the age of older than 7 and older, you find yourself in something that no service provider has. On the one hand, the client or the parents. On the other hand, your loyalty is with the child, confidentiality, etc. How do you navigate that?
Very easily. The priorities with the child. Mm. There is obviously legal differentiations. Depending on what age the child is how much you are legally able to give over to the parent. Mm. So obviously under, I think, 12, I think the parents have more rights to know more.
Yes. Self-harm and is...
Yeah, and then obviously self-harm and...
For sure when there's danger things, but when a parent is the one who's coming to you because they're concerned about their child and they hired you because they're concerned about the child, you do need to give them some affirmation and holding and calming down. So obviously the secrets are staying secrets, but where does that balance come in?
It's very tricky, but definitely, again, without all the legal issues aside, that obviously, you know, age and harming and potential dangers, where obviously, and you explain that. I think that's something that's very important. When the child starts therapy, I spend the first session asking them, do you know what confidentiality means? This is what it means. This is what's going to happen. Everything, we keep everything here except for X, Y, and Z, and then I keep to my word. I have a rule. Maybe I'll sum it up with this. I have a rule that I don't tell the parent anything without the child's permission. Mm. Okay. So if there is something pressing or the parent really wants to know something, I'll ask the child's permission.
Okay.
And that's sort of how I navigate it.
Okay. Okay. So we'll come right back after the marketplace break, and we'll be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back here to discuss this dynamic, and a very interesting dynamic of crossing the line of the boundary between supporting parents and families and supporting the child. Jody, you were about to say something and we took our break.
Sorry, I just wanted to say what I do also in practice is parents are not allowed to ask kids what they've done in their sessions. If the child wants to share with them what they have done, they are welcome to, but parents are not allowed to ask, what did you do, what did you say, what happened, because it's supposed to be their private and safe space and as safe as possible. You know, we talk about safe, but for everyone, safe means different. So they're as safe as possible or calm space, and in that, they do not have to give a full report back to their parents. If there's something specific I think needs to be raised, as Gabriela said, I will ask if I have permission to do so. But otherwise, I set it up from the beginning that this is for them and not for me.
And that's theirs. And they can feel connected to that. And the art itself.
And if the parent really is putting their child in therapy because they really care about their child and wants what's best for their child, they will understand that that therapeutic relationship is sacred and the trust can't be broken.
Okay, you know, that's putting some stress on the parents.
But there is definitely, if you want the therapy to have the effect that it needs to have, if trust is broken with the child because you've told the parents something without their permission, or you know that they didn't want said, then there's no point in them. You know, then the therapy's, that trust is broken. The therapy is,
or they're not going to come back.
Yeah, so it's counteractive. But yes,
Come into play.
Yeah, but you were going to say that the art. I was also going to say what we spoke about in the break, that the artwork in the art therapy space, the artwork itself is also confidential.
Okay.
So we try and really treat that with as much confidentiality and respect as we do with the words that are said.
Okay, amazing. So we do need to end the show, as every great show does come to an end. But just on a last, really, 5 seconds for each of you, what do you wish we knew, and what can we know about therapy that will give our children a better future? Gabriela. Um, Jody, and we'll come back to you.
I think it's in how we plan and how we manage and regulate ourselves as parents, because our children do feed off us. And if we haven't learned to break certain patterns of how we were taught and how they've been taught, and we are never going to change that. So very often I feel like all of us need to be in some form of therapy, and we need to learn as we are the parents so that we can give them better stress skills, stress management, anti-anxiety skills, and recognize it in them. So recognizing it in ourselves first, and then
being able to support our kids, Gabriella.
Exactly.
Yeah, and just to maybe, I'm going to really wrap it up, but to do that with art and like enjoy the expression, the creativity.
Enjoy the connection. Yeah. Don't give up. Make it happen. And we will, please God, make it amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you, Gabriella Mendelson, art therapist, for being here. Thank you, Dr. Jody Acer, for being with us today with your parenting program. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. And thank you to our listeners that you're with us week after week, Monday 2 to 3, every week with a new topic. And don't worry, we will be back next week, Monday 2 to 3, learn about something else. And achieve our new topic and new goal. In the meantime, stay safe. Enjoy your great month of preparation for the holy holidays.